Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, November 28th, 2010. This is episode 722. Enjoy. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here,
the Tech Guy.
And this is the show where we talk about, you know, stuff with chips in it, digital stuff. Tech, of course. 8888 Ask Leo if you'd like to ask me about home theater or cell phones. If you'd like to ask me about iPods or iPhones, Droid or Android. Still talk about computers. I don't know how long that'll last. And of course, the internet, that's omnipresent. That'll be with us. Isn't that interesting how computers are taking a back seat these days? We still use them. But all the attention and all the growth and all the innovation is happening in the little things, the little ones, the cell phones. And then this was the year that everybody started making little computers to attach to your TV, to connect your TV to the internet. So that you didn't have to attach a computer to the internet. They're all computers. I mean, let's be clear about that. They're all computers. They're just small. And really, that's the magic. If you ever this book was a prescient book. Really kind of predicted everything that's happened. And I think in some ways what's going to happen. But it was written 20 years ago by a guy named George Gilder, who in some ways is kind of a kook. And George, if you're listening, I say that with love. But he's brilliant. And he wrote a book called Microcosm. When was that? It must have been the 80s. Microcosm, in which he talked about really everything that's happening today. And he said that the key feature of the revolution that we're undergoing is this really strange property of microprocessors. Normally when, if you think about a Swiss watch or any other kind of mechanical technology, making it smaller means making it more complex, more difficult to engineer, more expensive. You pay a lot more for something smaller when it's mechanical. It's exactly the opposite in the microcosm. In the microcosm, as chips get smaller, they get more efficient and less expensive. So it's a revolution. He called it, the subtitle is, The Quantum Revolution in Economics and Technology. And I think it really is. If you want to understand what's going on today and what's happened today, it's important to understand this kind of, there's two key facts. That's the first one, of course, is that the smaller the thing gets, the chip gets, the lower the power requirements, the less it costs to make, and the more capable it is. And then the second very important rule that goes along with all this is that, yes, 20 years old. He wrote it in 1989. 20 years old. It was something we call Moore's Law. Gordon Moore, one of the founders of Intel, one of the early chip pioneers, coined the law 40 years ago, said that this is actually the law. You'll hear it kind of said in different ways, but this is the actual law. Every 18 months, the number of transistors we can put on a chip will double. That really, if you want to translate that into English, means that every year and a half, the power of these microprocessors will double. The power, their abilities, their capabilities will roughly double every 18 months. And that's been happening. He was amazing. I mean, that's been happening for 40 years. So I remember when the book Microcosm came out, we were using 386 microprocessors. This was 1990. At 90 megahertz, you were thrilled if you had 8 megabytes of memory in there. Your hard drive, if you had a 500 megabyte hard drive, you were loaded for bear. You were fat and happy. And that was only 20 years ago. And then it doubled every 18 months, doubles and doubles and doubles. And if you did the math, you'd see, I mean, this is exponential growth. This is fast growth. And at the same time, it's getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, isn't it? We can get a computer today on our desktop. This little MacBook Air, which is $1,000, has more power than a supercomputer of 20 years ago and costs one thousandth as much money. And I could carry it, with two fingers, if you see the ad. That's an amazing thing. So that's what's happening. But it's happening now, that kind of all happened on the desktop. Then it went to the laptop. Now it's going to tablets and then phones. And these things are getting smaller and smaller. And yet they're more and more capable. But there are problems to solve because as something gets smaller, what gets more difficult? Input and reading. The screens get smaller. The keyboards are non-existent. So we need to make some leaps in other areas, user interface areas to make these small devices. I mean, eventually, it's completely conceivable that we'll be plugging them into our ear or we'll have a little jack at the base of our brain. You just plug that thing into. That would be the ultimate user interface device. You think it happens. You think it, the computer knows it. We may, this is the stuff of science fiction. And I'm very hesitant to say what's really going to happen because who knows? Who knew that we would have, routinely, we would have in our pocket on my keychain 8 gigabytes on a thing the size of a chiclet. I mean, who would have, I wouldn't have guessed that. 10 years ago, I would have said, no, come on. It's very science fiction. So I'm not going to say something's not going to happen, but we are running up against some limits. Moore's Law, kind of running out of steam. Even Gordon Moore said, we got a few more years, but at some point, these things get so small that the quantum effects become important and you can't even tell what the signal is because it's like Schrodinger's cat. It's two places at once. So there's a limit to how small you can get. We're also running into limits, it turns out, in understanding. Computers, it turns out, are not as good as we thought they would be by now at understanding speech or handwriting. Notice that? They've gotten okay. You can dictate a story if you speak clearly and slowly and you are willing to correct every word in 10 or 15. But it's not exactly open the pod bay door, Hal. I'm sorry, Dave. I can't understand you. We got a way to go. And some are saying, I've talked to different people who say different things, but some are saying we'll never get there. And then some, like Ray Kurzweil, say, not only will we get there, but in your lifetime, in the next 10 or 20 years, computers will be indistinguishable from the human mind. They'll be designing themselves and then stand back. He calls that the singularity. There's some debate. We'll see. You know what's cool? Most of us will be here. We'll be able to see how this bet works out. So, yeah, we talk about digital technology, but boy, that's a lot, something kind of interesting. It's the nature of reality in some ways. My phone number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888, if you want to talk about this, 888-827-5536. Okay, yes, you can ask me why your computer won't print. We'll talk about that, too. 888-ASK-LEO, 826. Oh, forget it. You don't need to call me. Hey, we're going to get a special call about an hour and 15 minutes from now. A very well-known art collector and banjo player is going to call, and he's just recently started using Twitter. I think too very well, but he has some questions about the Twitter. He also wants to know about this Android phone. He's been an iPhone user, wants to understand the iPhone, the Droid X. So we're going to answer some questions, some questions from a very, very well known. You know him. You've heard his banjo. He's an amazing banjo player, amazing fellow. Got a new book just came out, as a matter of fact. Talk about that too. A new novel. First novel. Banjo player, art collector, novelist, comedian, movie star. We'll ask about Twitter in just a little bit. But first, your calls. In fact, coming up in just a bit, Super PC from the East Coast. I think what Super PC is about 12, right? Super PC? 13, 14? He's in that range. He's a youngster. Wants to know about going to high def on YouTube. And Mike wants to protect his hard drive from the government. Just don't take it flying with you. We'll talk about that in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after these words. Leo Laporte, I'm the tech guy. This is episode 722 in a continuing series to try to understand what the heck is going on out there in this world of technology. You can find more about this show and all my 721 previous attempts at techguylabs.com. You'll also find a link to our fine chat room. You'll also find, which, you know, is a lot of fun. If you've never done chat before, it could be a little intimidating. The chat room is fun because it's heavily moderated. Protected, and there are good people in there who will answer your questions and talk. It's really fun. So go to techguylabs.com, click the chat link there if you want to participate. We also have a live video you can watch of me doing the show. Nothing more fascinating than watching a guy talking to a machine. It's kind of gripping. Mike in Glendale, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mike?
Okay, Leo, here's my question for you. I need the best way to encrypt all sorts of hard drives on all types of computers, laptops, desktops, portable hard drives. I want to use mil-spec specification, military specification, 256 characters or better. So
In my opinion, when you do encryption, it is important. There are a couple of things that you want. First of all, Microsoft, Windows, Apple all offer strong military quality encryption on their hard drives. Almost all laptops do it. In fact, some of the more modern laptops use a chip in the computer itself to do the encryption, which makes it really robust. However, these are all closed source encryption technologies, which means they don't show you how they do it. You know, they'll tell you, oh yeah, we do, you know, traditional AES 256-bit or triple DES or Blowfish. All three are very good, strong encryption technologies, but they don't show you the code, which means if, and I don't want to be paranoid here, but if a government agency decided to put a back door in there, it could be there. You wouldn't know. If Microsoft made a deal with the NSA saying, well, you know, we'll give you the back door, you wouldn't know. In fact, there was a move afoot, which has been tabled, but we'll probably come back with the next Congress, to pass a law requiring such a back door in all encryption. So this might be a good time to go out and get some strong encryption. And if you do, my recommendation is to get open source encryption. That means you can inspect the source. Now, Mike, you're probably not a C or C++ programmer. It probably is meaningless to you to look at the source. But you, if it's open source, what that means is many who can understand it have looked at it, have vetted it, have made sure that the algorithms are correct, that there are no backdoors, that it does what it says it's going to do, no more, no less. There really is one program. It's fantastic. It's free. It does exactly what you want, and it does a few other things that might be of real value to you. It's called TrueCrypt. And you can find it at TrueCrypt.org, TrueCrypt.org. It does two kinds of encryption, file by file and whole disk. Actually, it will do directories as well. So I guess that's three kinds. But you can encrypt the entire disk. You can make what it does essentially is creates a virtual disk that mounts when you log into your operating system, Windows, Mac, or Linux. It's cross-platform. You give it the passphrase, and I suggest a long, random phrase to make it successful. And there it is. You can read it. It's in clear text, but as soon as you log out, boom, it's encrypted. They even have a plausible deniability feature, which essentially makes it look like random data on your disk. It doesn't look like an encrypted file. I'll tell you why that's important. Let's say you're hauled in by authorities in another foreign land, where they don't celebrate the freedoms we have here in the United States. And those authorities say, you will give me your passphrase or we will torture you. Well, you're going to give them the passphrase, or they could just have a warrant and you have to give them the passphrase or you'll go to jail. And this has happened in this country, as a matter of fact, where you go to jail. If they look at something and they can't tell there's data there, it doesn't look like an encrypted file, you can plausibly say there's nothing. What passphrase? I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing there. And they have no way of knowing that there's, in fact, encrypted data on there. It has a lot of other additional features. You can bury the encryption key in a picture. I mean, it's great. Now, some of you are probably saying, well, golly, what about the terrorists? Yeah, well, that's right. And that's exactly why the federal government, our Congress, is considering and probably will consider in the next Congress a law making this kind of thing illegal, forcing a backdoor in all encryption and encrypted technologies for this very reason. But I would say that there are probably also very good reasons for you to have privacy, even from our federal government. So I'm, in my opinion, this is something, you know, it's challenging. I admit bad guys can use this as well as good guys. But for right now, this is still out there, still, you know, secure, still pristine, untouched by the hands of the government. TRUECRYPT.org. They update it regularly. Its current version is 7.0. It really is an amazing app. Highly recommended. And I do recommend it over any commercial encryption, merely because you know, people who know can look at it and see what's going on. It's a very interesting philosophical question, though. Should we have access to strong cryptography? And bad guys could use it, but so can good guys. And I think that there's real reasons why you might have to, you know, keep stuff private. I believe you have a right to privacy. I don't think it's written in explicitly into the Constitution, but I believe you have it. Super PC, how are you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, everyone.
How's Trix?
How's
Trix?
I guess good, even though I don't eat the cereal.
Tricks are for kids. So Super PC does a video show. Tell us where your video show is.
It's fancyshowtech.tv, but it's also a tech blog, kind of partly, and a live show. We now do a podcast called Mac Review Weekly. It's completely different from Mac Break Weekly. Don't worry. It's just we just sit around and talk about Macs.
Oh, I am worried because, frankly, Super PC, you're about to take over my entire empire. In a few years, we'll wait till your voice changes. But in a few years, you're going to be sitting on this ball talking on this show. I have a feeling.
Maybe.
Can you wait till I'm ready to retire?
I don't know. I don't know
you're in a hurry, huh?
I'm not in a hurry. I don't know what's happening with that.
It's amazing, isn't it, how it just kind of takes off all by itself.
Well, I'm your
so your call. Question is, you say you're going to use you use YouTube to post the videos. You'd like to take advantage of YouTube's new high def capabilities, right?
Yeah, I already do screencast in high def, but I really do want to edit on Mac. I've been editing right now with a Sony Vegas free trial, but soon I'll be switching to full HD and get an HD camera that connects the i8 you recommended last time. I just want to know if there's any software for Mac that would be really, like, that would be good software for
it. It comes with iMovie, part of the software. It comes with it, and it's great for high def editing. It's all you need. You don't need to get. You can down the road get Final Cut Express and then later Final Cut Pro, but you don't need those right now. I bet everything you're doing, including green screen, audio editing, especially the new iMovie, just fantastic. So you get a new Mac today, Super PC. You'll be getting iMovie with it, and it's what you should use. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right, automatic, off-site, and affordable. What more could you ask for Mac or PC? Try it free for 2 weeks. Offer code Leo. Go to carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. One of these days I'll figure out what number that is. But right now it's time to say hello to the home theater guy. Mr. Scott Wilkinson is on the line. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Did you have a good turkey day?
Very nice. Very nice. Quiet with the family, but very good. How about you?
Oh, yeah. We, again, with the family, the in-laws went down to Santa Cruz. It was very pleasant.
Oh, beautiful Santa weather. Cruz, my favorite place in the whole world.
Well, you know, I grew up there, so I loathe it.
You went to Santa Cruz High, as I
went to Santa Cruz High. You know, hey, who's that just wandered through the studio there?
Well, that was my wife, Joanna.
Joanna, well, just sneaking in there.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I want to talk to you about her because she has something really cool online right now. There's this movie that just got released called The King's Speech.
I can't wait to see it with Colin Firth as Elizabeth's dad, George the Fifth. What is he? Fourth?
George the Sixth.
Sixth. Now, he so hard to keep track.
He had a bad stuttering problem
during World War II, and they needed a leader.
That's right. That's right. Now, interestingly, my wife is a speech pathologist, and so she deals with stuttering, among other problems. And someone from the New York Times actually contacted her for some comments about this. And she actually has a fascinating story that she wrote about on a blog called blogher.com, female bloggers, I should say. And if you Google it, it's up near the top of the news for King's Speech. If you Google King's Speech, turns out her grandmother married the guy who Wallace Simpson wanted. Wallace Simpson ended up marrying Edward VIII, who abdicated for that reason. And thus George the Sixth came to the throne.
The woman I love.
That's right.
There's a little, well, there's a little
Catherine Hepburn. The woman that he loved wanted somebody else.
Well, that must have been
depressing. Somebody else married my wife's grandmother.
It's very confusing. Well, isn't that nice? So she could have been, your wife could have been a princess.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
So it's a fascinating story that she wrote about.
And so does she feel like the movie is accurate in the way that, I think it was Jeffrey Rush is the actor who plays the speech therapist who gets George the Sixth to talk properly, speak properly.
Right. Well, we haven't seen it yet.
I can't wait to see it. Yeah.
I can't wait to see it either. I'm really looking forward to that. I encourage everyone to go check out that blog that she wrote about that, her particular story, which is quite fascinating, actually.
It's at blogher, blogher.com. Blame my grandmother for the king's speech.
That's right. I mean, if her grandmother hadn't married the Argentinian diplomat that Wallace Simpson wanted, who knows how history might have changed. Yeah.
Birdie might have been the king.
That's right.
So now you're settling for the Prince of Wales, imagine.
Yes.
So let's talk home theater. This is actually a good time of year. I imagine there are a few people out there who stocked up on big screen TVs during Black Friday. Maybe you're planning something in Cyber Monday.
Yes, indeed.
And they probably have lots of questions. You answer questions, I should say, at the home theater magazine. You're editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV magazine, ultimateavmag.com.
Correct. But also we cover really high-end stuff.
Right.
But on hometheatermag.com is where I have a column called Ask Home Theater.
Yes.
Where I answer reader and listener questions every week. And I've gotten a bunch of questions, of course, and my apologies to anyone who I am not able to respond directly to because I get far more than I can answer. I answer as many as I can.
Well, let me start. Let me start by asking a question from yesterday's show.
Sure.
And I'll do it very simply. The guy has an AV receiver. For some reason, he wanted to have two out of his Blu-ray player, two HDMIs out. One to his directly to his TV to make it simple, so his kid could just turn on the TV and put a DVD in. But one then going to the AV receiver
for the audio.
Mm-hmm. And for when the kid watches the Blu-ray DVD, he wanted to obviously take the audio from optical out of the Blu-ray player and the video via HDMI. I said he needs an HDMI switcher. But the real question was, are both the HDMI and optical audio out of the DVD player live? In other words, if you use one, does the other one stop working?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever tried that.
Me neither. I didn't know. I said, Scott will know that.
I'd have to try it to be sure, and it might not even be consistent. I would have to, if I had to guess at this point, I would say probably so. They're probably both active.
That was my guess as well. Why would they disable one?
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure why you'd want to recommend that.
Oh, don't get into this. I didn't know. I know. No, that's just that was it. Well, let's constrain the question there because you're right. The whole thing is a kooky idea. But anyway.
No, in fact, I have gotten a question perhaps even this week about that very question. It was slightly different, which was the guy was sending HDMI from his Blu-ray player through his receiver and then onto the TV. But the picture had a lot of sparklies in it, and he blamed the receiver for that. And he said, can I get an HDMI splitter in this case, something that takes...
That's what this guy would have to use.
It's what this guy would have to use. And the guy who wrote me asked about, isn't there such a thing as a passive Y adapter like there is for analog audio? And the answer is no.
No.
You need a powered device to do that because unlike analog audio, HDMI is carrying lots of bidirectional information.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting. So the TV sends stuff back to the Blu-ray player.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Because they have to, A, it has to do with the copy protection. B, it has to do with what's called the EDID, the Extended Display Identification. And so the display sends information back to the Blu-ray player saying, these are my capabilities. I'm 1920 by 1080, or I'm 768 by 1366 by 768, or whatever, and other information about itself so that they're talking back and forth to each other. So you need some relatively sophisticated circuitry in order to handle all of that. Which is why you need a powered device, an HDMI splitter.
It's kind of like a KVM switch for computers.
Yes, precisely. Precisely right. Although it's for HDMI rather than VGA.
Are they expensive? I mean,
no, not particularly. You can get them in the $100 range.
Okay. It'd be just like a lot of people. I use these KVM or HDMI switcher.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have so many inputs to my, now with the Google TV, the Boxy Box, the right. Apple TV, I have too many things. I don't have enough HDMI ports on my TV, so I use a switcher. And I guess an AV receiver would act as that if you have
it. It would. And most AV receivers these days have, you know, 4, 5, 6 HDMI inputs.
Right.
So that's usually enough for most people.
Not
for you and not for me.
Yeah.
I have in my studio, I have by Accel, A-C-C-E-L-L. A 4-in, 8-out switcher / splitter. And we use that mostly for what we call face-offs. So we put a bunch of TVs right next to each other, calibrate them all, and feed them the same signal through this splitter switcher thing. And we can feed them different signals, different devices, this Blu-ray player or that Blu-ray player, game console, whatever, so that we can see the same signal on all of them. So splitters are a very useful thing, not that expensive, and really useful for things like sending the video to the TV, the audio to the receiver, which in the case of this guy who had sparklies, that might be the problem, though he might also have cables that are too long. So it might not be the AVR, which I detailed in my response to him on Ask Home Theater.
Excellent. You want to do another question? We have to take a break, but if you want to tease it. Tell us what the question is and give us the answer.
The question is, which is better, audio video receivers or separate components, preamp and amplifier? And there's a lot of controversy on this.
Oh, I bet there is. I mean, that reminds me of the stereo days where,
exactly,
you know, you get an all-in-one stereo or you could get an all-in-one receiver or you could get a amp, preamp, receiver and all this.
It's even more complicated with home theaters.
I'll be glad
to talk about that.
More with Scott Wilkinson, ultimateevmac.com, coming up right after this. Wilkinson is here, the home theater guru, editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com. He also answers questions at hometheatermag.com. And here, he also does a podcast for my Twit network every Monday afternoon, 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific at live.twit.tv. But you can also listen. It's on iTunes after the fact. Listen and watch. We do video of it. Who's coming up this Monday?
Ooh, Alan Kramer from SRS. Last week I went down to SRS Labs and saw a demo of a really cool new audio technology that could change the whole shape of home theater audio from being channel oriented to being object oriented. And it wouldn't matter then what your playback system would be. The data would include information about where each object is in the sound field, and the rendering device would render that as best it could. So if you had a 5.1 system or a soundbar system, it wouldn't matter. It disconnects the playback system from the audio data. Very interesting. Very interesting.
That sounds neat.
So yeah, it should be great. And this guy is right at the beginning of developing this. So that should be fascinating.
Tomorrow, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, live.twit.tv. All right. You asked a question. Separates or components when it comes to surround sound?
Yeah, separates or AV receiver. And the question that I was asked by the reader was, have AV receivers gotten to the point where they're as good as separates? And the answer is pretty darn close. But I think most enthusiasts would still agree that separates do give you the ultimate performance. However, they're more complex. If you put together a separate system with a separate preamp processor and a separate amplifier, one or more, that is a more complicated system to set up. And it's more expensive, generally speaking. You can get very good AV receivers these days that would give you, 80, 90% at least of that performance. But there are those that want the final extra little 10% of performance, and they don't mind doing the extra work and spending the extra money. The other advantage of a separate system is that if something fails, you can replace that one component without having to replace the entire thing, as you would with a receiver. Or if you want to upgrade, say a new format comes out and you want to upgrade the part of the system that decodes a new format, all you have to do is replace the preamp processor, leave your power amps in place, and you're good to go. This, in fact, is my vote question this week on ultimateavmag.com. So I would love everyone to go and vote there, which do you prefer? Do you prefer the convenience and economy of an AV receiver, or the ultimate quality, but perhaps greater expense and greater complexity of a separate system?
You know, the answer is pretty much the same answer you'd get if you asked me that for an all-in-one computer. Because there, of course, that's iMac, and many iMac clones are all-in-one, and the same issue. Yep. I don't think it's a quality issue so much as if it breaks, you got to bring the whole thing in.
Exactly.
You have less expandability, less configuration possibilities, fewer configuration possibilities.
Exactly right.
Scott Wilkinson, good to talk to you. UltimateAVMag.com. And you can email him, scott@techguylabs.com. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet. Thanks,
Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We still have many calls to answer at 8888-ASK-LEO. In fact, Chris is on the line from Houston. He'll be next. He says, iPad or MacBook Air? This is, they're about the same price. No, they're not. You can get two iPads for a MacBook Air. But maybe the MacBook Air is twice as good. We'll answer that question in just a bit. But I've got another answer for you if you're asking me what's the most important thing you could do today for your computing experience. And it would be, can you guess? Back up. Your hard drive will die. Laptops get stolen. They get lost. Users inadvertently delete data. And now, more and more than ever, we're storing really valuable stuff on our computers. Our family photos, our financial documents, emails, critical things. How would you feel if you lost them? Not so good, right? I know maybe some of you are backing up occasionally when you think of it to an external hard drive, but that isn't even enough. First of all, you got to remember it. And second of all, what if there's a fire? What if somebody breaks in and steals all their stuff? Francis Ford Coppola was living in Argentina. They stole his computer and his backups. He said 20 years worth of notes and scripts lost forever because he didn't use Carbonite. Man, I would have paid for the subscription. Francis, next time, just use Carbonite. Carbonite.com. I'll tell you what, try it free for 2 weeks. It's automatic, Mac or PC. No credit card needed if you go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. It'll start backing up to the internet automatically. You can use encryption. It uses encryption for the transit. So if you're in an open access spot like Starbucks, you don't have to worry. It's safe. But you can encrypt further using strong AES 256-bit or Triple DES or Blowfish. It'll encrypt it as it's going up and encrypt it on the server so nobody can see what you're doing. You know, that's important if you're a doctor or a lawyer. You've got, you know, you've got some fiduciary responsibilities for privacy for your clients. It's so easy. It's so automatic. Now, here's the best part. If you need that file back, you just log on to Carbonite.com from any computer and there's all your stuff. They even have a free iPhone and BlackBerry app. I want you to try it right now. Carbonite.com. Start your 15-day free trial with my name, Leo. No credit card needed. And if you decide to buy, 2 months free if you use my name, Leo. And you know, it's still very affordable even without the 2 months free. It's 15 cents a day, $55 a year for unlimited data, all the data on your internal drive. That's a good deal. But get 2 months free, make it even a better deal. Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. Chris Houston, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What can I do for you today, my friend?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to thank you for what you do because I watch pretty much all of your shows.
Oh, that means you really don't do anything else.
That's about right.
We do about, 30 hours of programming a week, 24/7 if you watch the reruns at live.twit.tv. You know, I bet you do what I think a lot of people do, which is you kind of have it in the background.
Well, yeah, I have in the background at work, and I watch all my...
Think of it as kind of continuing education.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you. I appreciate you doing that.
Anyway, I'd like to ask you a question about what to buy. See, I'm kind of... I've been using Windows all my life. I am really torn between getting either an iPad or a MacBook Air. The reason I'm choosing the MacBook Air is because I kind of want the Mac experience. I've never had the Mac experience. I play with a Mac. My sister owns one, but that's really all I've done.
You'll get a iOS experience, which is the same as the iPhone on the iPad. iPad is, they're both great devices, but they have very different kind of usage models. The iPad is not really a computer. It's like an iPhone. It's a device, a gadget that lets you do a lot. Tweet, watch video, navigate. It's got GPS, keep track of your calendar and your contacts. But it is, it's touch based. There's no real keyboard. There's an on-screen keyboard. I wouldn't say although I've seen people do amazing things with it, I wouldn't say it's really ideal for content creation. I think of it as a sophisticated content consumption device, a programmable television, if you will. And if you want to, think about how you use a computer or how you use devices, digital devices. If you want to write, if you want to program, a keyboard makes a big difference if you're going to do a lot of typing. Email even is, I think, easier on an Air. Now, the nice thing about the Air is it's very light. It's a little heavier than, it's about twice as heavy as and twice as expensive. But this is the 11-inch Air I'm holding in my hands, and it really is as portable, I would say, as an iPad. I mean, it's something that you're just as likely to kind of throw in your bag or keep under your arm and carry with you. But it's more capable. It's not touch, though, so it's not as intimate an experience. They're really very different platforms for very different things. What do you like to do? What do you do with a computer? Are you a gamer?
Well, my main PC, desktop PC, is mainly for gaming. So I wouldn't be using this device for...
Well, but I have to say the iPad is a really interesting gaming device because touch, not all games, obviously. It's not great for, Crysis. I wouldn't play Far Cry on it. But first-person shooters aren't great on it. But there's a lot of very interesting games using touch. A lot of puzzle games that is just a very nice... It's actually a good gaming platform. Macs now have Steam on it, but this iPad, MacBook Air is really underpowered for anything that you'd be doing on a PC, for instance.
Yeah, I'm not really looking into it for gaming, the iPad has plenty of games.
Games are pretty neat on the iPad, but it's a different kind of experience than your PC gaming experience. Do you do programming? Do you write? Are you a student? Anything else that you do?
I'm just the average Joe. I don't do anything.
For light email, surfing... the iPad is great for, Facebook. The iPad is great. It's probably all you need if you're doing... It's a light-duty device. But you're right. It's not the Mac experience. I don't know if I've helped you, but there are definite differences. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. Now anyone can make a beautiful, professionally looking site in minutes, quickly, easily, affordably with Squarespace.com. It's hosting plus great software. I want you to try it right now. Go to Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY to try it free. No credit card needed for 2 weeks. If you decide you like it, you get 10% off for the life of your site, but you got to use the offer code TECHGUY. Squarespace.com. If you're considering putting together a site, a new site, your first site, really good for first-timers, I think. Squarespace.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. About half an hour from now, Steve Martin coming up. He wants some help with Twitter. I don't think he needs help with Twitter. I was just looking at his Twitter account, which is Steve Martin to go. He's just tweeted, makeup and hair team now preparing me for Leo's show. The guy's scary. Team of advisors briefing me. It's busy around here. I sent him a note. I said, don't be nervous. It's it's going to be fun. Steve's really taken to technology. And I think, you know, he joined Twitter not so long ago, maybe 3 or 4 months ago. And I think is one of the most interesting people to follow on Twitter now. He's not your, you know, typical celeb on Twitter. He's really funny. He's really using it to have some fun. And to communicate with people, and I notice of late, and I'll ask him about this, he's been responding to people quite a bit. His Twitter handle, Steve Martin to go. And you can tell it's him because he's got a little check mark next to his name. That means it's a verified account. Twitter does that when, you know, because people can impersonate people. But Twitter puts that little check mark up there, that little blue check mark. You can also tell it's him. I wonder if he did this on purpose. Not because there's a picture of him. Anybody could find a picture of Steve Martin. But there's a picture of him in front of, well, first of all, he's holding a banjo. And he's in front of a very large modern painting by that he owns by a painter named, I think it's Eric Fischel, called Barbecue. It's a wild painting with a kid blowing fire and there's a bowl of fish and dad with his eerily happy grin barbecuing in front of the pool. And I think that it's almost like holding up a newspaper with the date on it. It's kind of to verify, yeah, the only Steve could be doing this. I guess anybody could find that picture somewhere. We will talk to him in just a few minutes. But meanwhile, back to the phones I go. 8888 Ask Leo. Lots of people with lots of questions. Robert in Cypress, California is next. Hey, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I'm a web merchant, and I heard you talking a while ago about GoDaddy having security issues. And I have my commercial sites hosted on GoDaddy. And I wonder what your current thinking is on GoDaddy.
So I don't, you know, it's not necessarily GoDaddy's fault, but here's the problem with all shared hosting: if the company that does the shared hosting isn't really cautious and careful, you put a website on a machine, and there may be 100, 200, 1,000 other people using that same computer. A web server is just like a regular PC. It just is in a network operations center. It's got better cooling. It's got better power conditioning, backup power. And there may be thousands of machines, and there may be thousands of users per machine. That's called shared hosting, and that's what GoDaddy and most relatively inexpensive hosts will do. To make it more affordable. And unless your site is really heavily trafficked, there's not a problem. There is a potential problem here, though, because if somebody hacks into any of the sites on that machine, depending on the hack, they can compromise the whole machine and perhaps put malware. This is a very popular thing for bad guys to do, is to find websites, hosting a blog with the security holes in the blog. WordPress has had problems that way. A lot of software has problems that way. lot of the bulletin board forum software has, you know, well-known security flaws. The bad guys figure out, or, you know, just by doing something dumb, you could put a security hole in your site. And I have to say, I have to confess, I have done that. Mm-hmm. What happened to me is I let somebody upload a file to a site, a PHP file, and it was set in such a way that he could execute the file. So he completely compromised my site. So if that happens on a shared server, your site can be serving malware without your knowledge. And this is not uncommon. In fact, you'll see Google will warn you sometimes when you're going to a site, hey, this site has malware on it. Because Google looks for common malware exploits and will tell you, are you sure? They'll put a big red warning. Are you sure you want to go to this site? Okay. Maybe you better not. Is GoDaddy worse than anybody else? Not necessarily. GoDaddy was hit, but I think many other hosts have been hit. It's up to them to keep an eye out, to make sure this doesn't happen, to lock down their systems.
Let me ask you this. I'm at about $500,000 a year in sales. And
wow, that's great. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
If you were in my position, would you go to a dedicated box server provider?
Yes, I would. I would go, you're spending enough now. You're making enough now that you can spend $100 a month on a good server.
Yeah.
Come on. Stop with the $5.95 a month. Uh-huh. You'll get better responsiveness. I would suggest looking for a managed server solution. What that means is that somebody, unless you want to be a security expert, probably don't.
I don't.
Somebody is paying attention to this and has locked your server down. Now, there are two ways to do this. You can go to an unmanaged server and hire somebody, and all the companies that do this will give you names of good people who will periodically survey your system for security, make sure it's locked down. You're going to get a much, much more secure system by doing that.
Do you have any names of managed server providers?
I use a company I highly recommend called SoftLayer.
SoftLayer?
Yep, they're in Dallas, SoftLayer. You're talking $50, $100 per server. You get a couple of advantages. First of all, you're the only person on that computer. Mm. So if somebody's site gets real busy, your site doesn't slow down. If somebody's site gets compromised, your site doesn't get compromised. If somebody does something stupid, you don't crash. So that's nice. You have much better control of it. I don't know if they offered managed solutions. I'm sure they do, but they certainly we don't. We do an unmanaged solution because I have a team of admins who manage it for me. But you can hire people, absolutely, and SoftLayer will tell you who. And they may even offer managed solutions. Managed is more expensive because there's a human there paying attention.
When you say it's a dedicated box, is it a dedicated virtual box or a dedicated physical box?
It's you get the whole computer.
So you got the hardware and
it's all yours. Yep. You're leasing it, obviously. They own the hardware, but nobody else is using it.
Yeah, so if somebody else blows up, they don't take you with them.
Yes.
Okay.
I think you're making enough money. This is a serious business at this point. You know, look, if it's just your blog, big deal. But you're making money on this. This is a critical thing for you. You certainly don't want to lose the business by people saying, oh, my gosh, you know, Robert's got malware on his site. So do it right. Spend a little money. It's not expensive, and I think it's a very good investment.
Okay, well, let me see if I can and see what they got to offer.
Yeah, they're good. I really like SoftLayer. We spend a couple of thousand a month on servers for my podcast network.
You wouldn't believe how much I spend on GoDaddy pay-per-click. 50,000 a year.
Yeah, you're getting some advantages there, right? Because they're giving you business.
Yeah, Google pay-per-click. Yeah, the advertising.
Yeah, but it's worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, advertising doesn't cost, it pays.
Yeah, that's what I think. I tell all my advertisers that.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you sell, Robert?
I sell wearing apparel by a very well-known marine artist, wearing apparel and other associated items.
Had you done this in the real world in a brick-and-mortar store, or was this something you just decided?
I used to sell shirts at gun shows, and then we transitioned into fishing shows. And the only brick-and-mortar presence is we do a fishing show at the Long Beach Convention Center. Brick-and-mortar is such a pain. I mean, the problems.
I think this is really a revolution.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting in your house. Do you do your own fulfillment, or do you use an outsourced fulfillment?
Our own fulfillment, but we're looking in a couple of years to start our own company, hire somebody to operate it.
At some point, you can be working out of your bedroom with a multi-million-dollar business where you don't do anything. You do all the high-level thinking, the designs, the marketing. You pay for the Google Ads. And the fulfillment, the server, everything's handled by other people who are glad to do it. And you can be very profitable. And I think this is a revolution.
I you don't have one thing about a brick and mortar. They have overhead. It's called rent, electricity.
You bet. And you don't have that.
I have overhead. It's called shipping, and it's on the receipt.
Right. And think about this. That's this is why you don't cheap out on the server.
Yeah.
Think of all that's your store. So let's do that one right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. We're talking high tech, computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. Judy in Orange County, California. Orange County, OC. Hi, Judy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
A couple of questions. I was looking at flat screens at Walmart yesterday. 42 inches, and
yes.
Looking at the Vizio versus Samsung. Vizio has a 42-inch with 60 hertz opposed to the $558 120 hertz. Is there a big difference between those two?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a couple of differences that you might not see. Samsung is a premier brand, a top-level brand. Vizio is a second-tier brand, which means usually you get more bang for your buck. I think Vizios are very good, but Samsung might be a little bit better.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about the refresh rate, however. The 60 hertz refresh rate is normal. That's television. That's normal. That's what's on your DVDs, your Blu-rays. What happens on LCD screens is that they don't keep up. And by the way, even if it's an LED, it says LED, it's just LED backlit. It is an LCD screen that you're looking at.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the LED is the light behind the liquid crystals in the display. Otherwise, you get fluorescent. LED is better. Both of them will probably be LED backlit.
Right.
If you can get LED backlit, if the Vizio's not, then I would prefer the Samsung. But I, in fact, don't like what they do when they get the 120 hertz or the 240 hertz. What they're doing is doubling frames or guessing in between frames to double the frames. And the idea is to give you a smoother look because LCDs, the response time for LCDs isn't quite as fast as it is for your old glass tube TV. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if there's a lot of action or a lot of motion, it looks a little blurry on an LCD screen. So what they do is, and this is, I think there's a debate, and Scott will agree with me, about whether this is a good idea or not. You're only getting 60 fields a second from the source. That's all you're getting. So to get 120, they have to add another 60. That is the best guess between this frame and that frame. They have to guess what's in between. It smooths it out. It's less blurry, but it also gives it a very, in my opinion, a plasticky or a... It looks like a soap opera, a little bit of video-y flavor. So what I would do if I were you is look at both of them and see which you prefer. Do you like the smoothness of the high refresh rate, or do you prefer the more natural look of 60 hertz? I prefer 60 hertz.
I did look last night. They were showing us football, and I couldn't tell the difference.
They get the cheaper one.
Vizio, Ben.
Yep. Yeah, I think Vizio makes very good monitors. The other thing to look at when you go with a low-priced, high-def television is how does standard definition look? Because remember, even though you're buying a high-def TV, a lot of what you're going to be watching is not yet high-def. You know, your local channels, some of it's high-def, but not all of it. If you're watching I Love Lucy, there's no way it's going to be high-def. So you look and try to get them to put a standard-def signal on there and see, make sure that the Vizio looks good with standard-def. In my experience, it does. But that's where you, when you get a less expensive TV, that's sometimes where they sacrifice.
Right.
Is on the hardware. They have to put some chips in there to upscale the low definition stuff for the display.
Very good. Thank you so much, Leo. And I'm going to stay tuned and listen to Steve Martin.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes, I'm excited.
Is there anybody who doesn't love this guy? I mean, he's just.
He does play the banjo very well.
He does.
He does.
He's got a Grammy Award to prove it. Thanks for the call, Judy. I appreciate it. You too. Yeah, that's a very confusing thing when you go to the store and there's all these specs and I don't know what. Trust your eyes. But something you should be aware of course, is when you're in a store, the lighting is brighter than normal. they actually set the display in a mode that is designed for the store to make it brighter than normal. It's not how it's going to look at home, but you're comparing apples to apples. If the two TVs are side by side, you can say, well, I like how this one looks. Trust your eyes. Don't fall for all the who is it? Is it Sharp? The Sharp Quattro? Where they say we have four colors. we've got yellow. There's no advantage because everything you're watching has three colors. So the yellow is just sitting there, unused.
But there are four colors.
Matthew from Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
Very well. How are you?
I'm all right. I have a 3-year-old laptop, a VGA cable, and no idea how to get video from my laptop to the TV while my wife looks at her emails at the same time.
Okay. So the issue is that your TV doesn't have a VGA input, I presume.
Oh, no, it does. I have I can connect the video to we watch Netflix on our TV all the time with the cable. Oh. I just don't know how to do that and surf the net at the same time.
On the same display?
Possible.
You mean you want picture in picture?
No, I want.
Oh, I get it. You want your computer to do double duty.
Yes, exactly.
I see. So she's watching Netflix or something, and you want to be able to continue to use the computer. So there's a setting on the computer for external displays. All computers have two, there may be some limitations, but most computers have two choices. You have a mirrored display, which is what you're using right now, which is the same thing on the computer display is the same thing on the television. That's mirrored.
Okay.
You want multiple desktops or dual display so that there are, it is in effect like two displays on one computer.
Yes.
And what you'll do is you'll drag the Netflix window over to the TV and you should be able to continue to operate. Now some limitations apply because the screen, your video card may not be able to handle what you're doing. It may, for instance, lower the resolution of your email.
Okay.
Because, so you just have to experiment with it. But go into your display control panel and uncheck mirrored. And usually they call it extended desktop. That's what you want.
Okay. And I would get to that just by going through my control panel?
Yeah. You're on a Windows machine?
Yes.
Yeah. It's in the displays control panel.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward.
All right, very good. I think that's it. Thanks.
All right, thank you, Matthew. If you go full screen on the Netflix, that may screw it up. I don't know. I haven't tried this. The computer probably has more than enough horsepower to do this. You're just going to have to experiment just a little bit with it. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Is that right, Luis? I think it is. Luis Oliveira, he's in charge. He's looking at the phone, he says. We always say 888-ASK-LEO. It's 888-827-5536, I believe. And you can call that number toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you can Skype to us. Just use Skype out. It's a toll-free number. Won't cost you anything. 888-ASK-LEO. But we're going to take a little break. For those of you who are on the board, hang on. I'm going to get to you in a little bit. But we have a rare opportunity to talk to a budding geek in just a little bit. He's a banjo player, a novelist, an art collector, an actor, and a comedian. Steve Martin joins us. After the break, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do we have a a billboard for this? All right, well, then I won't bother with a billboard because I have got a very famous face sitting across from me. This is, you know, this is the first time I've ever used Apple's FaceTime.
And me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's working.
It's working good.
Yeah. Now, you're on your iPhone. Is that right?
I actually bought a little whole iPhone holder yesterday at the store, and it's working good. I clipped it to my computer screen so I can look right into it. I was going to have to sort of balance it on things, but it's a pretty good little device.
That's cool.
So you'll send me a check for that. It was
absolutely. We will reimburse you, and I notice you're using a very nice headset.
Got a little headset that I always use. I'm a professional, and I even have a little lighting thing here.
I noticed that. And according to the Twitter, you have the makeup team and the team of advisors in there.
Makeup, advisors, and a team of lawyers.
Are they whispering in your ear if I ask you a question?
They're holding up cards. Yeah, don't answer good, that. They're saying.
Good. You know, it's kind of fun to see you on Twitter. When did you start using Twitter?
When? It was about the middle of, early September.
Recently.
Yeah, it was very recent, and I did it kind of on a whim. I was actually talking to a friend of mine, Tom Hanks, and I said, "What do you do on it?" And he says, "Oh, I kind of talk about my movie, keep people interested in it, and I had some things coming out. My book and my record is out next year, and I have a movie coming out, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. But once I started doing it, I didn't have the heart to really promote stuff without serving up some content first. So I just started doing it. I really didn't understand it. And I started writing these little kind of narrative stories that I think I overdid it at first, but then I,
oh no, it's been fun. It's actually quite fun. On Twitter, by the way, I haven't said who we're talking to. It's Steve Martin.
And my God.
I know. I love him.
I'm so excited.
And your Twitter handle is at Steve Martin to go, which
right.
I like because did somebody have Steve Martin?
Well, I had the option. I could have gotten Steve Martin. I said, no, I like Steve Martin to go.
Yeah.
So I just stuck with that.
Yeah. It's like a lunchbox version of Steve Martin, a bento box.
Yeah. It's my head in a box.
Do you find 140 characters limiting? I mean, you're.
No, actually, you know what I've been trying to do? First, I kind of like it because I don't think people want to read too much. And I've been trying to stay away from LOLs and little abbreviations and trying to be grammatical. And I found that the present tense is much better than the past tense because it's actually shorter. And
might kind of be an interesting discipline for a writer, actually.
I like it. So it maybe sets me off from the others. I don't know. But I still don't understand a few things. I wanted to ask you a few questions.
Well, I'm here for you.
I understood. I finally figured somebody told me about direct reply. See, when I was first doing it, I was doing little narrative stories. So I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the next tweet by doing a response because then they wouldn't be in sequence, my little tweets,
right.
Little narrative tweets.
Right.
So I didn't do that. And then I found out about a direct reply where you could respond to someone directly.
Right.
So I would do that and send them a sort of a private email. And then someone told me that you could, then I figured out that you could just reply. But I don't know what people are seeing. You know what I mean? If I reply to someone, here's my question.
Okay.
If I reply to someone, does that go out to all my followers? Or does that just go to them?
I will confess that I did not know at first, and I was misusing it. So mm-hmm. I can tell you from bitter experience what happens. When Twitter first started, there was no at sign. Users actually were the people who created the at sign because in the early days of Twitter back in 2007, people would sometimes want to direct a tweet to somebody. So they'd put that person's Twitter handle with an at in front of it. Just kind of as an informal shorthand way of saying, hey, this, you know, I'm responding to somebody. The folks at Twitter, I think very cannily said, oh, this is a feature and incorporated into Twitter. So now when you put an at and say at Leo Laporte or at Steve Martin to go all in one word, it's a clickable link. People can click it, go to that person's stream and see and follow them. So it's a good thing for discovery. But they also added, a nice feature. If you begin a tweet, let's say you're responding to something I said, and you begin the tweet with at Leo Laporte. That will only be visible, this is the rule, and it's not obvious, I'm sure it's documented somewhere, but that will only be visible to you and people who follow Leo.
I see.
So it doesn't, in fact, if somebody's just following you and not following me, they won't see it. Which is why sometimes you'll see when I respond to people, I will put some regular text, thank you, at Steve Martin to go, and then more text. Now that's seen, everybody sees that.
Now, do you have to cut and paste that? Or
Well, you
or
can, and that... if you're, it depends. What do you use to tweet? I know you're an iPad user.
Yeah, but I usually use my computer.
You just use the web.
I use the web, and I have my little Twitter thing, and it's so if I see something, if you respond to me, for example, I come down here, it'll say reply, retweet, favorite, and give me the time. But I usually click on reply. So that if I reply to someone, it goes to them and their followers.
Them and their followers. Your followers won't see it unless they also follow the person you're talking to.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's a way of having a little bit of privacy. Now, if I go and I look at Steve Martin's entire tweet stream, I'll see everything you've said.
Recently,
you tweeted the real sister Wendy, well, then get a podcast life. Now, I can see that.
His sister Wendy was complaining that he or she had to download a Flash. So I suspected he was on an iPad.
Right.
He had to download Flash.
So you're answering people's tech questions.
Pardon me?
You're taking my job. You're answering people's tech questions.
Oh, that's the point of this call. I'm trying to get over your job.
So anyway,
you
can
do stand up. Oh, sorry.
No, I can't. So there you go. I see that only when I go to, if I were following Real Sister Wendy, I'd see it. But if I am only following you, I'll see it only when I go to your list of tweets.
Got it. But if I retweet.
That's everybody who follows you sees that.
And does it include what they sent to me?
Well, now Twitter kind of screwed this one up.
Uh-huh.
There was an informal syntax for retweeting where you would just copy the entire tweet. Add RT at the beginning to say, I'm not saying this, I'm retweeting somebody else's. Sometimes there were different ways of, informal ways of doing this. You'd put an RT, or you'd put via Steve Martin to go, or you'd put it in quotes or not. By the way, did you invent the air quotes? Because somebody in the Wikipedia says
no,
you invented those. Okay.
No, that existed a long time ago.
Thank goodness, because for the last 6 months, every time I do that, I've been saying, copyright Steve Martin. So I'll stop that now.
No, I didn't invent that at all. Okay. We used it on an early show. We kind of made fun of it, but
right.
It was many years ago. So I kind of got credit for something I didn't
It's public domain now.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of the traditional retweet. Now, Twitter, about a year ago, added this kind of button that says retweet. And it does something much more mechanical, which is just kind of takes the original tweet and puts it in your stream. Without any RT or via or anything. And there's some debate about whether that's the right way to do it. In fact, some clients will give you a choice of old style retweeting or new style.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see.
So if I press retweet on my little computer here, it's just going to send out what they sent me. I can't add a response to it.
You can't put anything in it. It will merely put that retweet into your stream. Put that original tweet into your stream. With a little, it does a little kind of sometimes hard to see inset of that person's picture on yours, and it says it's a retweet, but it's not obvious.
Sometimes people send me something funny, and I'd like to sort of send it out, but add my comment.
I'll tell you how to do that when we come back. Can you hold on for a second?
Okay.
Steve Martin's joining us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. Steve Martin is here. Yeah, that's Steve Martin. I suppose there are other Steve Martins, but this is
there are a lot of them, actually.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for them.
This is the Steve Martin, and Steve Martin to go is his Twitter handle. By the way, great website. Very funny. I love the yellow pad note to yourself about what to do on stage, which I think has kind of fallen off the front page now.
Thank you.
really great. That's stevemartin.com. He is Steve Martin to go on Twitter. You don't do Facebook, though.
No, I have a page on Facebook that was created when my first album, The Crow, my only banjo record, came out. I have another one coming out in March, by the way. But it was created for me, but I never really got into it. In fact, I looked at someone else's Facebook page just yesterday. I logged in, and Facebook immediately started sending out invitations to my entire contact list. And I just logged off.
Yeah, just unplug the computer when that happens.
Yeah.
And run.
Yeah.
But you know, you're not strangers to technology. Would you characterize yourself as technically literate? Or you've used?
I'd say I'm computer literate, but I'm not. You know, I'm not a techie. I wouldn't know. I don't think I could set up a router, but I could. You know, I'm pretty savvy enough.
Yeah.
You know, I like it.
Good.
I mean, here's my cell phone.
It's a stapler. It's very
Yeah, that's a stapler.
Good reception, though.
Yeah, I'm not getting good reception.
Be careful with the ear. You don't want to stick that in there. I'll give you a plug, as long as we're plugging for the new book. Oh. By the way, really great. To be honest, when a comedian and movie star writes a book, you go, well, okay, let's see. You know, but Shop Girl was brilliant. And this is your first full length novel, An Object of Beauty.
Well, first, yes.
Mm-hmm. Or
An Object of Beauty.
You've tried some abbreviations.
Smoob. A lot of people sent in very good ones. Very good. You know, very good abbreviations for An Object of Beauty. Obooty.
Obooty. I like that.
Yeah, there was Smoob, Steve Martin's Object of Beauty.
Ah, those are the Smoob.
There was Nobobo. There was, I like this one, Jectobute.
I liked Jectobute. That was my, I was going to call it Jectobute.
Yeah. Booty was one. That goes on and on.
An Object of Beauty, brand new, highly, I actually have read the whole thing.
Wow.
Cover to cover.
That's more than the television interviewers
did. I know. I watched Charlie Rose kind of flip through it and go, Paige, this one was a kind of a labor of love. And once I started it, I fell in love with it. And your character, what's her name? Fantastic.
Lacey Yeager.
Lacey Yeager. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's about the, when we talked last week, you said, oh, your audience is going to be interested. It's about the New York art scene. But actually, that's just the backdrop for the characters, but that's a fascinating backdrop.
It is. It's a very, I've been involved in it for 30 years and I love the art world. It really has affected my life, actually being involved with paintings and art and artists and dealers and people who love art, collectors, and of course the paintings themselves. Let's not forget them.
Yeah. Your Twitter, if people want to see a little of Steve's collection, his Twitter photo.
That's right.
Has an Eric Fischel.
You got
Fischel.
It right, an Eric Fischel. How'd you know that was an Eric Fischel painting?
I didn't know. I had to. I searched for it, but I found it. Mm-hmm. And reason I found it is because I think you had this on exhibit at the Bellagio at one point.
I did, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just to sum up on this retweet.
Oh, yes. We haven't finished our retweet.
It sounds like it's maybe not so valuable to me.
Well, I think what you should do is the old style retweet. If you want to comment, if you want to, gloss what somebody has tweeted, which I often want to do as well, the best thing is to cut and paste and put. But what you do is you have two choices. I think the best way is to preface it with RT, capital R, capital T. Usually I will put you might have to edit it because, of course, you got to get it into 140 characters.
Right. Yeah.
So you can
that
put
sounds like a lot of work.
This is why, by the way, there's a retweet button where you do nothing. You just say, OK. But if you want to gloss it, you cut it, you paste it. I would paste in their at, you know, sign right at the beginning there. I usually put their tweet in quotes and then put my addition at the end. You can use ellipsis if you edit it.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a good thing to do. I think this is part, really, in all seriousness, and I think a lot of people, you know, kind of don't get Twitter or mock Twitter. It is a form. And
I think it's like radio. Because I can actually create a scene in people's heads that it's like listening to old radio.
I agree.
Put people on a train, or you can put them on a plane, or they can see things that you. It's like being in an animated cartoon. You know, I can have a monkey running at the airport.
That's right. And you have.
I still don't quite understand how I cut and paste all this, but I see. So I just copy this. I would copy it.
Paste it into the window. The
tweet window.
Yeah. Precede it with capital R, capital T. I usually leave.
How do you spell that? Capital R, capital T. And that's an actual.
This is code. It's what people did before Twitter added this retweet button. And I think still many people prefer it. If you search for RT, you'll see a lot of retweets.
Right. And then I would put my response in a bracket or something.
Well, yeah. Somehow signal it. There's really no convention for that.
Right. I see. Okay.
There are, you know, and if you try, you know, you might want to look at some other clients instead of using Twitter's own website.
I see.
TweetDeck, Seismic Desktop, a lot of these will give you a choice of new school or old school retweeting.
Yeah. By the way, I wanted to tell you my term for when you're very happy with a piece of software.
Yes.
And then they improve it. And then it's no longer functional and they've taken out your favorite part. I call those deprovements.
It's been deproved.
Yes.
It seems to happen a lot.
Voodoo. I used to use Voodoo all the time to watch movies on. And then it was sold to Walmart and they improved it. To the point that I can no longer use it. I call that they deproved it.
Have you tried the Roku box? I think you'd like that.
I'm getting one installed.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I think you'd like that quite a bit. I'm sorry. There's a fly on your face. Excuse me.
It's actually just where I live.
No, it's not. I apologize. I'm shooting the screen, and unfortunately, there is a fly in here, and it's on the screen. Get out of here.
I live in a tent in the belt, so. There's a lot of flies around here, too.
But it's just such a great pleasure to talk to you, Steve.
It is. So should I ask my last question?
Please do. We have a few
in line at the doctor's office.
You are.
I think and get Leo.
Nobody on hold minds one bit. I'll give you the special warm line. You can call in any time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anytime.
I can sell it to people.
Who's this? Steve gave me the number. So go ahead.
As I said, I have a hard time because I do travel quite a bit that I've had to actually set my computer on one time zone.
Right.
And never change it. Because every time I change the time zone, my Outlook calendar changes all my appointments by 3 hours.
Right.
And there's absolutely no way that I can figure out to stop it. My suggestion is
actually to stop using Outlook.
What do I use instead?
I would just use the Google Calendar. And are you a Mac?
Calendar does it too.
Sure.
Yeah.
You have to turn on time zone support, but you actually want that. What you want to do is...
Why do I want my appointment shifted by 3 hours?
But when you enter the appointment, get your assistant to do this. When he or she enters the appointment, put a time zone in the entry. So say, I'm saying this appointment is 12:30 Pacific time. And then Google will adjust it according to your current zone so that it shows the actual time that you need to know.
Oh, I don't want that. Seriously. If it's 3 p.m., if I'm in L.A. and I say this appointment is at 3 p.m.
Right.
in New York.
Right.
I don't want to know. I want it to stay 3 p.m. I don't put it in. It's really 6 p.m. Fuji time. I don't put it in. I put it in 3 p.m. New York.
You're not alone, actually. And almost all programs, including Outlook, you can turn off time zone support. And then it's just a fixed time. It won't pay any attention to the time where you are. It'll always be whatever time you like to use, specific time, I presume.
Well, Outlook, I can do that. But because I'm going through Google.
You have to do that in the Google Calendar. Turn that off as well.
I'm telling you, it doesn't work.
Really?
I've done everything. And my droid phone, I could not tell it what time zone I was in. I know there's a greater.
Steve, I will research this. And I will ask the greater Leo, and I will research this. We have to run. Steve's book is an object of beauty.
It's been great talking.
Great to talk to you. Real pleasure. Okay. We're big fans. Is it in color on the iBookstore?
iBook. I know it's in color on the Kindle iPad.
It is. Okay.
The iPad app, it's in color, yes.
You really want to get, and I got the Audible book And there's no pictures, obviously. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by the folks at Citrix, who make a great program I should have used with Steve Martin called Go to Assist Express. Anytime you need to do support, especially if you're in the business of support, Go to Assist Express is an amazing program. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Just go to GoToAssist.com/Leo. GoToAssist.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, thank you for hanging on. Those of you who stayed on hold during that painful half hour, I hope we helped, Steve. It's just, it seemed like it just wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't sinking in. No, I'm just teasing. And I do, and I'm in all sincerity, now that he's gone, I can say I really did enjoy the book. It wasn't, I'm not just blowing smoke. This was a highly recommended book. If you want to read a great novel, An Object of Beauty, Steve Martin. It does have some adult content, not for the little kids. But if you have a grown-up mind, I think you'll enjoy it. David in Simi Valley, you're next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, David.
Hey, hi.
Welcome to the show.
Last time, thanks, Mr. Laporte. So, I was talking to you about my computer shutting down after a minute, and it was giving me a shutdown time.
Right.
So I ended up rebooting it. I lost everything that I had in there, so because I didn't have anything in there.
Has it still doing that, or has it stopped doing that?
It stopped. Yeah.
It no longer says I'm going to reboot.
Yeah. It was crazy.
That is a symptom, by the way. The forced reboot after a minute, if it happens every time, is a symptom of a virus called Sasser, a virus infection. But it doesn't sound like that's what happened. You know what? So it said, well, I know you have a different question, but just to follow up on this, it said we're going to reboot in a minute. Did you save out your stuff or did you just... It was crashed. Yeah, it's nothing you could have done about that. The computer had basically crashed.
Yeah. Do you know if that NOG 32 that you promote, you think that would stop it?
Well, I can't say. I'm not sure what's wrong with it. If it's a virus, you bet.
Yeah.
If it's Sasser, you bet. That's what the virus was. But here's the problem these days, David, with viruses in general, is that the guys who write them are very cagey, crafty fellas. And they don't want you to erase their tracks. They don't want you to get rid of it. So a couple of things. One, nowadays, Sasser is kind of an outlier. Nowadays, most viruses in no way signal that you have been infected. That's the last thing they want to do. They're not out there to mess with your mind. They're out there to use your system without your knowledge. So today's viruses quietly do their work, unless they're poorly written and they have another problem. They quietly do their work. And if you do scan your system with an antivirus program and find a virus, very often the antivirus program will say, you know, I got it, but I can't get rid of it because the bad guy has written it in such a way that it's got its hooks in your system. For instance, often they modify system files. If the antivirus were to erase the virus, it would erase a system file and your system would never boot again. So these guys, I mean, this is nasty stuff. The best solution is not to get it in the first place. And that's really where something like an NOD32 or a good antivirus and modified behavior is really critical. It's much more valuable proactively. After the fact, if you've got the virus, your best bet's just going to be erase the whole thing and start over. That's just the way it is. Sorry, David. Bad news. Jody in Lafayette, Tennessee. Is it Jody or Jode?
Jody.
Hi, Jody.
Hi.
What can I do for you today?
First, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. It's tomorrow. Thank you very much. I already got my birthday present. I got to start to talk to one of my heroes.
Yeah, Steve Martin.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Too cool for work.
He seems like a very nice guy.
He really does.
Yeah.
He really does. I mean, very seriously, he does.
Yeah, I think that probably is part of the secret of his success, is that that comes through, doesn't it? You know, everything that he does, this kind of genuine sincerity and sweetness comes through, and that's probably why people like him.
I think so. That's why I like him.
Yeah, me too. So all of that aside, what can I do to help you, Jody?
Okay. A friend of mine, I have Windows 7 on my machine, and I use Microsoft Essential Security. I'd love to use NOT 32, but I haven't gotten there yet.
That's fine. I'm not going to hold it against you. It's not a requirement.
I just got the machine. That's one reason it hasn't.
That's fine. And in fact, I think Microsoft Security Essentials, which is free, is a very good choice. I don't have any problem with that. It's free. You get what you pay for. It doesn't do all the things NOT 32 does, but for most people, it's certainly better than nothing.
Oh yeah, nothing. Yeah. Dangerous.
Yeah, it's scary out there.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, a lot of your viruses are written in such a way you can't get rid of them.
Yeah.
Without kicking your whole system out.
These guys are, they're evil. They're really evil.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm a geek, but not that good a geek to know what to do with them.
Well, basically, as I said, it really is down to you. I think even an antivirus is not sufficient protection. It's what you do. It's you always make sure you do the Windows update.
Yep.
I'm sure you got a brand new Windows 7. The good news is Windows 7 is much more secure than any previous version. It's really, they've done a very nice job. So, make sure you got the automatic updates. It's the second Tuesday every month. Microsoft will push fixes that patch your system up. So you got to do that.
Yep.
Be very careful about where you get files and the links you click. Always kind of be thinking. And you know what? That user account control, the UAC in Windows 7 is very good. When it pops up, says, hey, this program wants to modify your system, don't just click OK. Think about it. Does this make sense? Did I ask a program to install? Did I initiate something? And if it doesn't make sense, click no.
Do right.
Yep. So what can I do for you?
Well, like I said, a friend of mine recently wanted me to hear something. And I have pop-up disabled. And he said, well, can I temporarily enable pop-ups? And I thought, do I want him to do this?
It's always, I hate pop-ups. Everybody hates pop-ups. Mostly they're ads. They're not bad things. They're just annoying. It's fine to temporarily enable them. Just disable them as soon as whatever he's doing is done. It's not unusual. I have to do it from time to time. You go to a website that pops up a window, and that window, instead of being an ad, contains content. So you have a couple of choices. You can globally enable pop-ups for that moment. You can tell in some browsers, you can say, don't block pop-ups on this site. I want to see pop-ups on this site.
Like that. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. You can enable pop-ups on that site. Pop-ups are just ads. They are not inherently bad for you. If you've been doing the stuff I told you about, updating your operating system, keeping your browser up to date, having good security software, pop-ups by themselves are inherently not dangerous. The pop-up that really concerns people is the thing like Antivirus 2009, which many people see, where it's a pop-up, it's an ad, it says you've got a virus and download our antivirus to fix it. That's a dangerous pop-up, only because if you believe it and click OK, you'll be downloading a virus.
Well,
but the pop-up in and of itself is not dangerous.
Well, you warned me about it.
Yes.
The thing that I was really concerned about was once he enabled a pop-up for their player so I could listen, started throwing ads at me hand over fist.
Yeah, that's why they use a pop-up player, isn't it? A lot of radio stations do that. That's why.
Radio station.
Yeah, it's a radio station. So in order to listen to the radio station, you have to allow the pop-up player. And guess what? There's ads with it.
Yep, but are they dangerous?
No.
Will they produce a lot of spam?
No, they won't do anything. They just pop up. It's just annoying.
Thank you. You just let me.
Don't worry, Jody. You can listen to the radio. You're just going to get some ads. And guess what? It's time to break for an ad. Hey, we got a power bill. Just the power bill alone. We got to pay for this stuff. 8888 Ask Leo. More calls right after this.
up this morning, clock said I was late for school. Teacher told me that's not cool. Gotta put my shirt and pants on, flew down the front stair, wet my fingers and slick my hair. Elbowed grandma passing by, her face went into a pie. If I'm late, there's misery, I won't be up on history. I'll be in the English grammar slammer, and I'll get a C. God warning.
That's Steve Martin from his album The Crow, the Grammy Award-winning album. And that is a song that he wrote. He's also a children's book based on it. Just a wonderful song called Late for School, and a great book, Late for School. He plays a banjo, and it's just actually, again, I hate him because he's so darn talented. Amazing. Evelyn in Corona, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Evelyn.
Hi.
What can I do for you today?
Happy birthday. I just heard it's your birthday tomorrow.
Thank you very much. You know, when you get past 50, it's the last thing you want to do is celebrate a birthday. I would put it off if I could, but I guess I'm stuck.
What happens to those who are over 60?
Yeah. Hey, as I always say, it beats the alternative.
Mm-hmm. And that was nice, the interview from Steve Martin.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a real pleasure. It was a real treat. You know how that happened was he tweeted me. He direct messaged me and said, I listen to the show. I'm a fan. I said, whoa. At first I thought, no, that's not Steve. That's the tech geek that he has doing his Twitter feed. But then after a while I realized, well, no, that's definitely Steve.
Actually, so I
owe Twitter for meeting Steve Martin.
Uh-huh. Actually, I knew him for the first time, but I knew him speaking German, because all his movies were being dubbed in Europe.
Oh, how funny.
So it was quite funny when I was in the States and he started speaking English.
The TV show I used to do, I think they aired it in Japan, and it's a very odd experience to watch yourself speaking on screen and somebody else speaking Japanese for you. It's a very strange
experience.
Yeah, that's
true, because I got used to him speaking German.
Right. Different voice and everything.
Okay.
What can I do for you, Evelyn?
I have two questions. One for an old lady that I'm trying to help because I'm a volunteer.
How nice. That's a great thing to do, by the way. Great thing.
No, I'm not very technically. I just understand a little bit about computers. Well, anyway, she has an XP 2000 XP Home Edition.
Okay.
And she has still dial-up.
Okay.
And I heard about your DSL Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I was able to convince her about this DSL Extreme. And I was trying to load it, but then you have to register name, address, etc., so they will know if it's available.
Right. You need to use her address.
Yes. I did all of that, and it keeps on loading and loading and loading. And
you know what? Just save yourself the time. Maybe there's something wrong with the website. Call them, 866, the number 2, GETNET. Mm-hmm. They're a sponsor, to full disclosure.
Well, anyway, I don't know if that's the thing, and I had to go, so I just told her, just click it off, you know, and we'll try again, and or call, or maybe
You know how the internet is. Sometimes it's broken.
And then it comes a window which says debug.
Oh, yeah. Was this on her computer?
Yes. And I had
early versions of Windows, which she has, and early versions of Internet Explorer, which she has. And by the way, you could do her a big favor, Evelyn, and update her system. Because she's using a very old version of Internet Explorer. For some reason, by default, we used to get questions about this all the time. This JavaScript debug window comes up. It's turned on in the settings that you debug errors in the web page. Now, there's no reason for that because you didn't write the web page. There's nothing you can do about it. It shouldn't give you an error message. It should just say, there's a problem, but I'm going to keep on going. Because what are you supposed to do about it? Call DSL Extreme and say, on line 37 of your JavaScript, you've got a missing comma. You'd get nothing you could do about it. So that should be turned off. It is turned off by default in all modern versions of Windows and modern browsers, but it is not in an early version of Windows and Internet Explorer 6.
And then it freezes her.
Yeah, she needs her computer's in bad shape.
So I just booted. I just turned it off. Now the next day when she called me, when she turned it off, it just, you know, like it says the HDD, you know, the BIOS, et cetera, et cetera. And then later on the bottom line, it comes there like a long window wherein it's downloading, and then comes the window. Now, it doesn't go up to that. It just turns on and it comes.
It doesn't boot fully.
Yeah. And then at the end, after all what is in there, it says boot from CD DVD.
So, yeah.
Now
her
what?
Computer, her hard drive is dead.
Uh-huh. So the hard drive
good.
Is bad?
Well, it could be that if, I hate to say this, Evelyn, but if you turned it off while it was writing to the hard drive, it could be just that. It could be that the hard drive itself has had problems, and that's why she was having the other problem. It could be bad data on the hard drive. It's hard for me to tell from a distance. But yes, it's not booting now. What first question to ask her, Evelyn, is, do you have anything on this computer that you need to save? Are there photos on here? Is there writing? Anything you've done on this computer that you want to save? And if she says yes, then you need to bring it into a computer store and be very clear with them. The hard drive won't boot. But we have data on here. We want you to save this data. Most cases, it should not be expensive. If you get to a ripoff, it might be. Most cases, it will not be expensive, because really, it just means that probably some of the necessary boot files were damaged or missing. But if they take that hard drive out of that computer, put it into another computer, they'll be able to see all our data and get it off. This is something you can't do easily because you need another computer. You need to open it up. You have to open her computer up. You have to do kind of like heart surgery. You have to take the hard drive out of her computer, put it into the new computer. I mean, this is a big deal. You don't want to do this. So get a computer store, somebody reliable, somebody trustworthy to do that. Get the data off of it. Then they can reformat that drive. They will have a tool. There's a great tool called SpinRite. You've heard me talk about it. They'll have a tool that can recover, probably fix that drive. If not, a new hard drive is fairly inexpensive, but her computer is 10 years old, at least if it's running XP. So it's at least 10 years old. So it's worn. It's worn out, and hard drives don't last forever. So she either needs a new hard drive, a new computer, or a tech guy to kind of refresh that hard drive by running SpinRite on it, getting the bad sectors off, reinstalling Windows, restoring her data. It's not a hard thing to do. It's not an expensive thing to do. You're going to be paying for the amount of time that tech takes to do it. It should be a few hours, should be no more than a few hundred dollars. But if she doesn't have data on it, then you can just wipe the drive and start over again. You only need to spend the money if she's got something on that drive that she doesn't want to lose. But that's an important question to ask her. Because you absolutely do not want to do anything that's going to lose data. She might be a little angry if that happens. The tech guy could do this for you pretty quickly. Sonia's coming up in Tampa, Florida. It's her birthday. We'll celebrate. And she's interested in getting her Blu-ray player hooked up to her TV and says, I don't get it. Well, I'll help you. Hilda in Rancho Cucamonga with a question, too. She just started a new business, wants a website, but doesn't have any money. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Steve Martin is ZZ Top, only on this show. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. We were just talking about them. High-speed internet at a really great price. 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Back to the phones we go. Logan in Yorba Linda, California. Logan, Leo Laporte here.
Hello.
Hi. What can I do for you?
I have this blog, and I wanted to have a recommendation for a web service.
Okay. What's your blog?
Appisafe.
Okay, and what do you talk about in your blog?
Space and NASA missions.
Oh, we've talked before, Logan. In fact, you sent me a great photo, didn't you? Was that you?
No, I don't think so.
Man, I tell you, there's too many smart kids out there. So what's your URL? What's your website?
APISPACE .WORDPRESS.com.
So you're using WordPress.com, which is a very good service, free service for blogging.
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy with them?
Yes, but I wanted to get my own URL so I don't have this annoying WordPress.com.
Right. Well, the good news is you can do that without leaving WordPress.com. So this is really neat. So you're really into space, huh?
Yep.
Miami, I was too. When I was growing up, you know, we were going to the moon. I'll never forget it. You think there's still cool stuff going on in NASA and everything?
Yeah.
You're talking about astronomy too in here. This is cool. What a great site. Nice job.
The reason I want to go to WordPress.org is because embed codes for certain things.
Mm-hmm. You have more control. So WordPress.com is hosted WordPress. What that means is they run the server. You get it for free, but they put ads on it to kind of make some money off of you. Lots of people use it. It's like Blogger and a lot of other services that are free services, free blogging services. You pay nothing. But there are some limitations, and you're experiencing some of those right now. You'd like to be able to do more. Now, in order to do, you could still use WordPress. WordPress.org is the software that you download, but you need a server to do that. I want to underscore this. If you just want, you know, Logan's APISpace.com or whatever that domain is, you don't have to have your own WordPress installation to do that. You can do that on WordPress.com and a lot of other sites. There's instructions at WordPress.com to do that. You do have to buy a domain. You go to a domain hosting company like Hover.com and you'll pay, you know, $10-$20 for a domain, depends on the domain name, and per year. And now you have the domain. And then you tell the domain registrar to point to the WordPress.com site. WordPress has instructions. So you don't need it for just that. But if you say, I want more control, I want to do my own stuff, I want to put embed codes in or whatever it is, now you're going to have to, it's going to cost you more because you're going to have to buy hosting.
Yeah.
You understand that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most hosts, like 1&1, DreamHost, there's a ton of them. Most hosting services, you know, offer introductory service at $5 or $6 a month. And they, in most cases, have one button WordPress install. So it's pretty easy. You don't have to know anything to install the WordPress. You'll have to get your data out of WordPress.com and into WordPress on your site. So there's some work involved. And frankly, it's some technical involved. You know, the nice thing about doing it the way you're doing it, Logan, is you don't have to think about the technical stuff. You just put content up there. You think about the content. But do you want to learn about computers and servers and how they work and all that?
Well, I kind of do. Yeah.
Well, in that case, you should do this. The only way to learn this stuff is to do it yourself. And by the way, I should, you know, let you know, you'll probably mess it up a little bit. That's normal. Let me tell you how many times I've brought my site down and all sorts of terrible things. That's normal. That's kind of part of the learning process, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you can go into our chat room and ask for some recommendations. There are a lot of companies that do this. I think DreamHost and 1&1 are very big. I 330 is telling me in the chat room that you can pay for a WordPress.com site that'll give you more capabilities. Have you looked into that?
Yeah, but I always thought that it still restricts my embed codes.
Well, you should look, because I'm not sure exactly what you want to do, but they will let you do embedding.
Oh, because if you think objects and iframe terms in HTML.
If you really want to get down there and get into the HTML and stuff, yeah, maybe you won't be able to do that on WordPress.com. I was going to recommend Squarespace.com, which is a great, you know, it's our sponsor and a great site for that. But at the same, but they'll let you get into the CSS and they'll let you put in JavaScript. But if you really want to learn all this stuff, I think you probably want to go to a full hosting solution. But just be prepared. You're gonna learn a lot of stuff. What grade are you in, Logan?
Sixth.
Yeah, this is great. I encourage you to do it. Mm-hmm. Do you have friends who are geeks who can you can talk to about this?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I think that helps. You can bounce ideas off of people. You can get some help. If there's a user group in your area, you know, I think they'd love it if they'd see a young face come in and say, hey, I'm trying to set up a server. I have a couple of questions. You will run into questions.
Yeah. Because I was looking at the installation. And it says, like, first I'll do zip and then, like, change one of these files into, like, a... Yeah.
It gets complicated.
Like...
And truthfully, in a lot of these, you're going to be using Unix commands, Linux, not Windows or anything you're used to.
Good, because I already have that.
Oh, good. Awesome. Well, thank you for calling, Logan. It's really good to talk to you. I wish you the best. Go in the chat room. You can find that at techguylabs.com. And they'll give you about 100 different good companies to do this with. 1&1 and DreamHost are two I know about. Very affordable. I do not like GoDaddy, and I don't recommend GoDaddy. But they also offer $6 service, something like that. You're going to learn so much. You're going to learn so much. This is a really great way to do it. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more calls, and Hilda's still on the line. Wants the cheap solution for a website. You're next, Hilda. Hang in there. Actually, Sonia, you're next, then Hilda. But first, I got to tell you about backing up. With Carbonite.com, it's the best solution for anybody who's got backup problems. Backup, everybody needs to back up, and you could back up to an external drive or burn some CDs. And sure, that works, and I do recommend that. But everybody who is an expert in this field says... You also have to have an off-site backup, some backup that is not in your house in case the worst happens. And really, nowadays, we're putting so much valuable stuff on our computer. You know, great pictures of the baby being born or the wedding or our family trip. You don't want to lose those holiday pictures. They're going to be great stuff. So spend a little money, not much, 15 cents a day for Carbonite.com. Mac or PC, it's automatic. You put it on the computer. It uses your internet connection and is always backing up. You don't have to pay any attention to it. But when you need those files back, you can log on to any computer or even use the free iPhone or BlackBerry app and you get your files back. Try it free for 15 days and see what I mean. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. And when you decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free if you use my name Leo. So that's a really good deal. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. We're going to take a break in a second, but let me get Sonia on the line from Tampa, Florida. Hi, Sonia.
Hello. What an intelligent young man you were just talking to.
Wasn't that great?
I loved it. I feel so embarrassed. I needed to probably call him.
No, it just gives me hope for the world that there are smart kids like that who are learning this stuff. It's wonderful. I agree.
And they don't know how it's going to be so helpful when he gets older and in the world.
Oh, what a good skill.
And I love your first-time caller. I got through. I love your show. And my day has been made because I talked to my favorite tech guy of all.
Aren't you sweet? Thank you so much. Hey, I'll tell you what, I know you want to get that Blu-ray hooked up.
Yes.
And I'm going to help you do that. We have to take a break. I'm sorry to do this to you. Okay. But if you can hang on, I will help you with your Blu-ray, okay?
I'm not going anywhere.
All right. You stay right here, Sonia. Y'all stay right here. More to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show, the last segment actually, brought to you by our good friends at DSL Extreme, my internet service provider. Call 866, the number 2, get net to get DSL Extreme. Sonia, thank you for being so patient. And I'm told by Gina Salvati, who answers our phones, that it's your birthday. Happy birthday today.
Thank you, sir. And I just wanted to say, I remember you had a TV show before.
I did.
I was watching you back then, just not telling you how young we are.
Screensavers. You remember the screensavers. You had to call for help.
That's right. I watched you. I was faithful on that, too. So I remember that day back in the day.
Very kind. Thank you.
Well, my problem is I have a Samsung LCD TV, new,
okay.
And then a Magnavox Blu-ray, and then a 97 in new condition, Pioneer Receiver. And what the scenario is we wanted the volume, everything to run through the receiver. And I was dealing with all those cable wires. I feel
it's stressful, it's nuts, frustrating.
So
the most desirable cable to use, the one you want to try to use, is the HDMI cable.
Okay.
So that's a single cable. It's all digital. It has both video and audio, and it's got enough bandwidth to do the best quality. Every Blu-ray player has HDMI coming out of it.
Correct.
Not all receivers and TVs do, though, depending on their age. So that's where you might run into difficulty. Does your receiver have HDMI in?
Well, I'm not sure. Now, let me say, if I run the Magnavox through the TV, I can play it, no problem. But getting the receiver, I got lost when it's too many connections and too many plugs.
I know.
And on the side,
If this makes you feel better, Sonia, every time I move my stuff, I always think, oh, this will be easy, and I don't write down what I've done. I unplug everything, move it, and then I go, oh, my gosh, how do I reconnect all this stuff? HDMI is a boon because if you have late model gear, late model TV and late model AV receiver, it's a no-brainer. You take the HDMI out of your Blu-ray, you plug into the receiver, you take the HDMI out of your receiver, you plug into the TV, and you're done.
Okay.
But if you have an older receiver, and I suspect you do, that doesn't have that little HDMI cable in it, it gets much more complicated.
Exactly. The VCR, I was supposed to be looking for the VCR input out, and then my question is, Mr. LaPorte, am I able, do I run all the cable wires to the receiver, or do I take everything and take my Blu-ray, run it to the TV like I was, and then take the Pioneer receiver and run it to the TV, and then do I set the TV setting to external speakers on the TV?
Oh, there's no way, Sonia, I can help you in the remaining time we have here. This is very complicated. Most of the time, you do want to run it all through the receiver.
Okay.
It might not be as easy or simple, and you may not want to if you don't have HDMI on that receiver.
I might have to email you or get the Batman line.
You know what? Email me, leo@leoville.com, Sonia, because we're both having our birthday. Mm-hmm. I get overwhelmed by email. I can't answer it all, but I will try to help you. Give me the models of the TV, the receiver, and the Blu-ray player, and I will try to figure it out for you.
Thank you, Mr. LaPorte. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you too, Sonia. Thanks for the very kind words. So nice to meet you. If I could, I would come to each and every one of your houses, scare the pants out of you. No, I would come to your house and I would help you, but I can't. And so it's tricky. It's tricky. You know, I can't over the phone in a limited amount of time. There's not a whole lot I can do in some cases. That's why it's nice if you can find a tech person. A friendly tech person will come to you. And geeks, help somebody. Make that your New Year's resolution to help somebody who's not as technically savvy as you. I do want to mention Nod 32. This is my little gift to Windows users. Nod 32 is the best little antivirus out there. Now there are lots of antivirus choices, even free ones. But Nod 32 is more effective, is lighter weight, is faster than anything out there. And don't just take my word for it. CNET gave it their editor's choice, 5 out of 5 stars. The virus bulletin says Nod 32 hasn't missed a virus in the wild in a decade. I mean, this is a good virus, antivirus program that will catch every kind of bug, not just viruses, but worms, trojans, spyware, adware, phishing, rootkits, the whole menagerie of beasties that can affect you. And it doesn't, and it, most importantly, does it without slowing down your computer, without getting in the way. You can try it free for a month. Go to eset.com/Leo or call 866-935-ESET, 866-935-ESET. And there's a discount there if you decide to buy. I know you can get free ones. This is the best. And isn't it worth $30 or $40 a year to not get these bad guys? eset.com/Leo. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. Hilda, finally, Rancho Cucamonga. Thanks for your patience, Hilda. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy.
Hi. First of all, thank you, thank you, thank you, and happy birthday.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Just listening to you throughout the years just makes my life a little easier and more wonderful, and I can understand my kids. So,
aren't you nice?
Anyhow,
thank you.
With that said, Squarespace, I want the most economical way that I set up a website for myself, for my business. And
are you making money on the business, or this is a kind of the beginning?
Well, it's beginning.
Yeah. So, and will this business sell stuff on the site?
What I'll be downloading is properties. My husband and I are in real estate. I know.
Okay. So obviously, nobody's going to buy a house through the site. You're going to use the site to talk about what you have to offer.
Correct. And provide the links to the different listing, for example, information for agents to go to HUD, HUDHomestore.com, which has some of the properties that we actually list as well. So basically, it's more information than selling a product.
Yeah. I think Squarespace is a very good choice. Now, it starts at $12 a month, so it's not free, but you're getting hosting plus software. There are cheaper solutions, I got to tell you, but Squarespace is very easy. And what I would do is go to Squarespace, and again, disclaimer, they are a sponsor.
Yes.
I happen to like these guys. We use them for a number of our sites. But I would go to Squarespace and look at the examples and look for sites that are similar to yours, realty sites, that kind of thing, just to get an idea of what Squarespace can do. I think it's perfect for this kind of thing, unless you want to be like Logan, our sixth grader, a geek.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you just are focusing on the content, which I think you are, on your business, you don't want to have too much on the back end. You just want an easy way to put your data out there. In fact, a good web site will make it easy to update, and that's important because you don't want to just put something there and not ever do it. You want to make it so easy that you're kind of incented to continually update it. You don't want a cobweb site, as we call it, one that never changes.
I do need to update every other week. There will be new properties with information and photos.
Perfect. So perfect. I think Squarespace is a very good choice for you.
Excellent. Okay.
Another one, just, you know, to be editorially fair, another very good choice would be typepad.com. A lot of people use TypePad. Both of these are the same idea, which is they do the hosting and they have built-in software. Yeah.
Okay.
I think TypePad or Squarespace, I would compare both. Comparable in price, comparable in capabilities, but some people prefer one or the other.
Got it. And what about downloading photos, a program that you can recommend using Windows 7? Usually the program that I have today, I have to download every single photo in order for me to move it, you know, to wherever I need it.
You're downloading them from your camera?
From my camera, correct.
Yeah. Well, now, of course, Microsoft has its own photo program. You have Windows 7, so you can use Live, Microsoft's Live software, Live Photo Gallery. I would start by trying that. It offers SkyDrive, which is free online storage, which you can use for your website as well. You'll find that at get.live.com. There's another excellent choice I'm a big fan of. In fact, I prefer, called Picasa. This is a free program from Google, and that's PICASA.com. Both of these will do exactly what you just described, which is it'll allow you, well, you plug in your camera, you can set it up, they'll automatically run, they'll download all the photos, you can modify them, you can take a look at them, you can pick the best ones, you can upload them to your website, or use SkyDrive or Picasa, both Picasa Web, both services are free storage to store those photos online.
Wonderful. Well, excellent. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
Waiting for, and again, happy birthday. Feliz cumpleaños.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Gracias. And bye-bye, because I'm out of time. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. I hope you'll come back next week. We will talk about more geek stuff. Actually, if you're on the line, hang on the line. Luis Oliveira, who runs the board, reminds me we're going to be recording some calls. I'm leaving for Paris next Sunday, so we're going to record some calls ahead for next Sunday. So hang on the line. We'll do another half hour of calls at least. At 8888 Ask Leo. Good time when we do this to get through, because most everybody else goes somewhere else and you get to have a personal session. 8888 Ask Leo. Have a great geek week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See you later.